We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
It's Kevin Sheehan's show on the Team 980. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. If you have not already, go vote on our poll question at the Team 980 on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at the Denton Day. Do you believe that Terry McLaurin is going to get paid before training camp starts? Right now is very much in favor of yes. 74% of the voters are saying yes, that Terry McLaurin is going to get paid before training camp. I align with the voters. What does Adam Epstein think? We will bring him on. AWOD Radio is good enough to jump on with us. AWOD, my friend, always great to talk to you. I will ask you the question that I have asked many of our callers and our poll question. Do you believe that Terry McLaurin is going to get paid prior to training camp?
Denton, how are you? Thanks for having me on. It's a very interesting question to start with because I don't think I can say yes the way you're phrasing the question. Will he be there before the start of training camp? I don't know. Will he be there before the pads get on? I feel pretty good about that. So I'm looking at like July, I think it's 27th is the date that I am believing he will be in the building, ready to go. But to be honest with you, I mean, when I heard Terry McLaurin speak, I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry for him as a fan, cry for him as a guy that I root for, cry for him because he was a guy that was, like, crying to say, I want to get paid, and damn it, he deserves to get paid. But the situation is that Adam Peters wasn't here when he did all of that stuff with all these bad quarterbacks. And Adam Peters is a businessman, and this is a business, and so I think this is a situation where it's coming out that the Commanders want 2 years, he wants 4 years, might have to meet in the middle at three, but I'm kind of predicting 2 years, $70 million is what I think is going to happen here. I think they're going to have to give him an extra million or two, give him above a number that we just saw Garrett Wilson get, right? Terry McLaurin's better than Garrett Wilson. I'll say Terry McLaurin's better than Amon Ross St. Brown. That pissed me off when other people said he wasn't as good as him. He beat him head-to-head. Right, just like Jaden Daniels beat Jared Goff. That's what matters to me, the head-to-head. So I think Terry will get paid. I think it'll be another couple days, and I'm starting to believe it'll be 2 years, $70 million, maybe even $71 or $72 million.
So you'd give him $35 a year
if it'll keep him here in Washington. Yeah.
What was the thought from the Richmond area on the Eastern Motors press conference? I was not the biggest fan. I think the PR kind of left him out to dry. It was about 25 minutes too long. It should have been 10 minutes in and out, and it wasn't. Terry kind of got weird at the end. Body language not great. I wouldn't be either. 35, like, I can't go 35 minutes without a break. He went 35 minutes without a break. What did you guys think down in Richmond in watching that presser?
I mean, we felt like this was a guy that said everything you can say without saying demanding a trade. Right. I mean, he came as close to that line, came as close to the edge without crossing it. You know, he kept doubling down and saying how much he wants to be here, but also how much he wants to play for a team that respects him. And he still feels like he has more to give. And so that's what was so depressing from my perspective, was it was a guy who was kind of talking in circles because he was asked to. And it wasn't really by reporters. To me, this was a move by his agent. And I think his agent won, and I think Terry won, because now you're hearing everybody say, you got to pay that man. If you're not on Team Terry's side here, I don't understand what you're looking at with this situation. This man's done everything for this franchise on the field and off the field. You have to be Team Terry in this situation.
I thought that so I'm definitely on Team Terry. I thought that presser was just a disaster at the end. It should have been 10 minutes. Because he wants to be here. I firmly agree with you there. He wants to be here. I'm of the belief that they want him here. I just don't know what the holdup is at this point. But my thought is that they are going to start the conversations to really pick up contract-wise now. And I'm okay with that. I think they're going to start to pick up now, and I hope that they do. I want him to be in here training camp-wise. I want to ask you about Deebo Samuel. We found out yesterday 8% body fat. People were calling him fat. 8% body fat. How excited are you to see Deebo in this offense?
I mean, the most excited I've been for a wide receiver that came to Washington since Pierre Garçon, and I was obsessed with Pierre Garçon in the burgundy and gold. That's how excited I am. It's the most excited I've been for a wide receiver in probably 10 years, maybe longer. I mean, I got to look back to when Pierre Garçon got here, but that's what I think Deebo Samuel can bring. Is, you know, when Pierre Garçon got here, it was, hey, he was a 1B. Can he be a 1A? And so Deebo Samuel, it's, he was a 1A. Can he be a 1B? Right? Can he be a guy that is a 1,000-yard receiver, 8 touchdowns, 1,000 yards all-purpose, because maybe you give him to the ball, you give him the ball on the ground every once in a while in a game. I would love to see him, you know, tote the rock in the red zone and see what he can do there, and maybe some kind of a trick play element there. But this is the most excited I've been for a receiver in a long time. I love people calling him fat. I think it's bulletin board material. I think it's, he's not reading it, but it's getting back to him. The guys like Terrell Owens are calling him fat. All right, T.O., you look great. All right, good for you. But I believe in Deebo Samuel. And so there's all these elements that I think are going to help him have a good season, because there's so many things to play for. It's not just a contract season, right? It's not just a contract season. It's like a payback season for everyone that called you fat. And he's ring chasing. So is Von Miller. And you know what? If you want a ring chase in D.C., that is totally okay with me.
T.O. calling him fat is absurd. You would think that one wide receiver wouldn't come for another. Like, not everyone's doing sit-ups in the driveway when they get suspended.
Well, that's the thing. T.O. could call 99.9% of America fat, because nobody matches his body weight.
And right. I mean, that guy's, he's chiseled. Von Miller, fill in the blank here, Awad. Von Miller will have how many sacks in 2025?
6. And I'm okay with that. 6 sacks, 15, 20 tackles. But here's my take, is Von Miller will have 2 or 3 massive plays. And they might not even really show up in the stat sheet, because it might be a quarterback hurry. And they release it quick, and all of a sudden, Mikey Sanders will jump the pass. Or maybe it's a play in which he makes contact with the quarterback, and he throws a lollipop pass. Or it's a strip sack. Or it's just a fumble recovery or something. I think he's going to make 3 or 4 big plays, and I'm predicting one of them will be a game in which we're down by 3 with the game on the line and the defense needs a massive play. Because this is a guy that we didn't have last year when we needed that. This is the guy that when you're down and it's 3rd and 10 and everybody on the planet knows they're going to throw the ball to Mike Evans, they're going to throw the ball to A.J. Brown, well, now we have a guy that's going to hurry Jalen Hurts. And I've been saying that for years. We needed this. And so this is, even though, you know, he might be on the, you know, the last few years of his career, so is Bobby Wagner, so is Zach Ertz, so is Austin Eckler. Dan Quinn knows how to manage veterans better than any coach around.
I'm excited because I think he's going to teach the young guys a bunch. So they, yeah, like pairing up with the young guys, I think is going to be something really, really beneficial. How excited are you when you got the news that Trey Amos signed?
Very excited, because I was starting to believe that that was not going to happen. I don't understand why it's not being talked about more, that for a while 30 of 32 second-round picks remained unsigned. And there's been a flurry of signings the last few days, and I felt like half of them were yesterday after my show ended. They just all signed. And so it feels like it should have been a bigger story, but it's great news for the Commanders. I'm surprised it happened. I kind of thought this was going to be every single player getting together and saying, we're all not going to sign until we get that guaranteed deal.
Back to the Von Miller thing. How much did you enjoy? We talked about this yesterday on the show. Him posting in the burgundy and gold, not the cranberry red, in the burgundy and gold.
It was cool. I mean, I think it was cool that he kind of announced it himself, right? Like his Instagram post probably beat out Adam Schefter's tweet. He is enough of a veteran that he can break his own news. Right, he doesn't need to tell an agent. He doesn't need to tell some reporter. And so I got fired up. I mean, I really did. And I do believe that he can come here and, yes, he can teach the other guys, but I think he's going to make impactful plays. I really do. I look at what he did in Buffalo, and I don't think we gave him enough credit at times. He was like the defense needed a killer, and he was the killer. And so hopefully that's what he can bring here to Washington.
I mean, the Von Miller posting his own signing has got me, my heart rate spiking every time I see a Terry McLaurin story on Instagram, thinking that it's going to be him breaking this contract news. Adam Epstein with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. He is the host of AWOD Radio in 910 The Fan in Richmond and weekdays, Saturdays, I should say Saturdays, on 106.7 The Fan right here in D.C. from 9 to noon. Is there anything that you were concerned about heading into 2025?
Yeah, a bunch of things. I'm still concerned about a few things. I mean, this is a difficult schedule. There's a lot of prime time games. I did a weird bit on my show. I gave you 50 reasons 50 days away from the start of kickoff the Commanders would make it back in the playoffs. 50 reasons. One of them was because, I knew we'd get another edge rusher in the building before September 7th with Von Miller. But part of my take is we're going to have to go above 500 in primetime games. And we're going to have to find – we have so many of them. We cannot have a losing record in primetime games. We're going to have to go – I think we're going to have to go undefeated – Denton, write this down. Undefeated in those throwback uniforms. They're going to have to be the special sauce for this team this year. And believe it's Seattle, Denver, and Christmas against the Cowboys. We got to go undefeated in those games to make the playoffs. So I have a lot of concerns about the schedule. But in terms of the roster, I do feel a lot better. I need us to stay healthy because, you know, everybody's starting to say this is an older roster. Yes, they are. I think Dan Quinn can manage veterans well. He's done that in Atlanta. He did that in Dallas. So he's doing it here. But they're going to have to stay healthy. That's an element of surprise that we can't really control.
I like the going unbeaten in the alternates. One, I just think it would be great because I like seeing them win in burgundy and gold. But it also seems feasible. So I'm totally with you on that. How many touchdowns does Jaden Daniels throw in 2025?
Ooh. What did he throw last year? Do you know that number?
Let me pull this up.
I would say he'll throw 17 touchdowns this year. I'm guaranteeing he's throwing for 4,000 yards. I think he would have had 4,000 yards if we hadn't sat him against the Cowboys, sat him against the Browns, and if he hadn't gotten hurt against the Panthers. Like, that's three games there he could add another 150, 200 yards. So I think he's a 4,000-yard passer, and I'll say 17 touchdowns.
Because he was 3,500 last year with 25 touchdowns and 9 picks.
Okay. Yeah, I think the touchdown numbers are down, but the passing yards are up. I think Debo's going to get in the end zone on the ground. B-Rob's going to get in the end zone on the ground. I mean, if everything goes right for Washington, he should throw less touchdown passes because the problem was we couldn't run the damn ball into the end zone. It was so frustrating. We couldn't run into the end zone. It was like Cliff Kingsbury gave up on it. That's why he went to Adam Peters and said, I want a right tackle. They want to be able to run the ball into the end zone. So Jaden Daniels should have less touchdown passes if we can actually move the trenches with this O-line.
Are you more confident in this group of running backs this year now that the offensive line has been addressed?
Yes, yes. Laramie Tunsil is going to make, a big difference in the rushing attack. With hopefully Brandon Coleman, Biotis, I'm a big fan of his. I do think he's getting better and better, maybe, you know, hitting his prime here in Washington. So, I mean, I'm hopeful because that's the issue. You upgraded almost everything except for the running back room. So the only way the running back room is better is if the hogs in front of them are able to push the pile. And I think Adam Peters did the best he could at that. When you trade for a guy, you draft a guy, and you already had your guy from last year that you're going to move inside.
All right, AWOD, I'll get you out of here on this. So you believe that Terry is going to be playing for this team in 2025. Do you believe that he has another all-pro caliber season?
No. No. I mean, I think it'll be really, really good. But the wide receivers in this conference are amazing, right?
Stacked.
And that's an issue right there. And that's probably why they don't want to give him more than 3 years is because he could keep up with the young guys this year, maybe next year. After that, it might be, I don't know if he's too old, but, you know, Terry's never, as much as we love him, he's never been some NFL freak. He's not Terrell Owens, right? He's not Jerry Rice. He's not C.D. Lamb where he just looks like a mega god, right? Like, he's special because of the work ethic. He's special because of how much he puts into the craft of route running, how great his hands are. But he's not taller than everyone, faster than everyone, stronger than everyone. And so I do think, you know, what he did this year was amazing, and 90% of that was finally had a quarterback that could throw him the ball accurately. And so I think he can get 1,000 yards. I don't think he's getting 13 touchdowns again. And that's what would hold him back, I think.
Awad, appreciate the time as always. Before we let you get out of here, give us the lowdown. Football Fest, it's coming up in, what, a little less than a month now, right?
Yeah, a little less than a month away from my annual kickoff event. Kick off the football season with me and all your friends from 910 The Fan in Richmond with special guests like Tim Hightower and Fred Smoot. We'll have representatives from all the local universities like Virginia Tech, UVA, ODU, JMU. And so it's the only combination that you'll find of a festival that's music and sports. So we got a headline band, Gone Country, Richmond's favorite country music band. Mackenzie Ryan will be back to do a set, and she performs the national anthem. And then I take the stage with our special guests and do a full football season preview show. And we're going to be giving away prizes, swag, and we're even going to send people to Northwest Stadium. The only way you can get to Northwest Stadium through 910 The Fan is coming to Football Festival August 16th, 6 to 10 p.m. prime time this year under the lights at Scott's Edition River City Roll.
It's coming up, Awad. I'm excited for it. Appreciate it as always, my friend.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
That is Adam Epstein. You can hear him take the airwaves in Richmond in a little under an hour here, and you hear him every Saturday on 106.7 The Fan from 9 a.m. to noon. So there was one thing that Awad mentioned that I would like to address. He is not the first person that has mentioned this to me. As some of you know, I do a Sunday show on the BetMGM network, and my co-host on that show is PJ Glasser. He has brought this up to me, and I've just seen this conversation at various points on social media about Washington and primetime games and not being able to handle primetime games or the potential of struggling in primetime games. That to me is nothing more than offseason talk. I do not think that this organization is afraid of primetime games. The worst thing about having Kirk Cousins here for the years that he was, and Kirk just playing the amount of years that he has in the NFL and being a prominent figure, is I think people put a little bit too much stock into when the game is kicked off. And we saw that last year with Jaden Daniels. One of my favorite moments from media availability was the lead up to Cincinnati. I can't remember who asked the question. They had good intentions, but I can't remember who asked the question. Regardless, they asked Jaden, "Are you prepared to play in Cincinnati at night?" And Jaden looked at the reporter and said, "I played in the SEC." As if Cincinnati at night is going to be a more difficult to place to play than Alabama at night when he was wearing LSU purple and gold. I am not afraid of primetime games. This is not the Dan Snyder era where the team was awful in primetime games. The team was awful in primetime games because they had terrible quarterbacks. This team does not have a terrible quarterback anymore. I am not worried about primetime games in the slightest. I think Washington will be fine. That is also a benefit of having an old roster. I don't love that they have the oldest roster in the NFL. But the benefit is they have a lot of guys that have played in a lot of primetime games, and they have guys that have played in Super Bowls on this roster. So a Thursday night game against Green Bay in week number 2, not worried about that one. A Christmas Day game against Dallas, not worried about that one. Monday night against Chicago, not worried about that one. They'll be fine in primetime. I don't think that's going to be something that deters this franchise terribly much in 2025. Rob Brown is going to join us from the great state of South Carolina in 15 minutes to talk a little bit about the future of college football. He was at SEC Media Days. You guys know I love college football. There's a lot of moving parts to the potential of what the college football playoff is going to look like for years to come. He joins us in 15 minutes, but coming up next, a surprise resignation that might impact contracts in the NFL. Don't go anywhere. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dan Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. Rob Brown of the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate in South Carolina in about 10 minutes, talk a little bit about SEC Media Days and the future of college football and the college football playoff. Ben Standig will join us at noon. Waking up this morning to more NFL news. It was not Von Miller signing in D.C. That obviously happened 2 days ago. But this Lloyd Howell scenario that is playing out in the NFL PA offices has been really compelling to watch from afar. So if you are not aware of this story, has Kevin talked about this, Max?
A little bit. We kind of talked about it when Pablo Torre and Mike Florio initially did their big podcast, but we haven't really touched on much of the follow-ups that they've been kind of releasing over the past couple weeks. So if you want to take us, kind of take the listeners through, because it's a very confusing issue in a lot of ways, but they're, from my understanding, it's a big conflict of interest because he's currently or was employed by the Carlyle Group.
So Lloyd Howell was the leader of the NFLPA, a high-level executive at the NFLPA. And we first learned about this guy's name because of the Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast. He and Mike Florio reported elements of collusion with the owners and the league after the Deshaun Watson contract was signed. The collusion was they wanted to limit the amounts of guaranteed money that would be given out during contracts because the Cleveland Browns went rogue and signed Deshaun Watson to a fully guaranteed contract. And everyone was like, hey, we can't do this. This is a terrible precedent. It ended up being a terrible contract. Who saw that one coming, right? Only everybody. But it ended up being a terrible contract, so there was an element of collusion. That was what was originally reported on the Pablo Torre podcast with Mike Florio, right? Then ESPN dives into this, and they find out that not only was this collusion happening, but this guy, Lloyd Howell Jr., was very much aware of the collusion, and he was kind of one of the figureheads that was pushing for the collusion inside the NFLPA. And then once you got ESPN on you, like, ESPN doesn't carry the same sort of significant kind of oomph that it once did in journalism, but they still have real big J journalists on the payroll, specifically Don Van Atta Jr. Don Van Atta, very much a friend of this program. He was one of the many guys that would constantly report things about Dan Snyder when we were trying to get his rat-faced bastard ass out of here, right? So when Don Van Atta Jr. is on your case, you're toast. You are dead in the water. He is coming for you. So he reported, not only did Lloyd Howell Jr. know about this, he is also a paid consultant at the Carlyle Group. Who's the Carlyle Group? The Carlyle Group is a group, it's one of a very small amount of groups that the NFL has allowed to be an investor in the league, or has given them permission to be investors in the league. When people found out that Lloyd Howell was a member of this group, allegedly inside the NFLPA, they said, you should resign. This is a clear conflict of interest. You can very easily sway things in one way or the other. But if you're going to sway things, like if you are the head of the PA and the head of a group that's trying to invest in the NFL, you are going to sway things in the direction of the group investing in the NFL, which would then in turn be a very bad look for the players, and you would be doing a disservice to the players. They said, hey, you should resign because of this. And he said, no. And then there was some convoluted reporting on whether that question was actually asked of him. Did they actually ask him to resign? Did they not actually ask him to resign? Well, yesterday he resigned. He resigned because of all of the buildup of this story. And then on top of that, there was a piece of news that came out that took place in 2011 where there was some sort of sexual misconduct that took place at Bose Allen when he was a high-level executive at Bose Allen. It was described in the article that I read as sexual misconduct and retaliation, which is never good. Never good. If you just put that in simple terms, he probably asked somebody for a favor, very similar to what Mr. CEO of Astronomer was asking, although it just was not received as well as the head of HR with the CEO of Astronomer. Maybe Coldplay was not in town in 2011 for this guy at Bose Allen. So you have all these things, and he says, I am resigning. This has been an awful look for the NFLPA. Absolutely awful. An organization that at least in the from a broad perspective, I have thought that the NFL has done a relatively decent job with CBAs. Not great jobs. The players are never going to have the upper hand on the owners. It's just never going to happen. This was designed so that the owners are always going to have the upper hand. I don't care what sport you're talking about, NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, it does not matter. The owners are always going to have the upper hand on the players, but I have felt like the players and the CBA has been relatively decent. Now, there has not been a CBA that has been negotiated in the tenure of Lloyd Howell. He's been there for a little over 2 years, but that was right around the time of this Deshaun Watson contract, which is why this has been all up in arms. I use this as an example, Max, to really highlight in a day and age where it feels like good quality journalism is constantly under attack, good quality journalism is going to prevail in some capacity or another. Who would have thought that a guy that was more so on ESPN, an opinion guy, I liked High Noon with Pablo Torre and Bomani Jones. I believe Pablo Torre got his start on ESPN, at least on television, on Around the Horn, and he filled in for PTI periodically. I think he still fills in now for PTI periodically. He's one of the few guys, I think, that was let go by ESPN that is now freelancing for ESPN, a very small fraternity of people to do that because his podcast is on the Ringer Podcast Network. Maybe you don't care about the ins and outs of the media, but I find that to be interesting. It is just a nice quality example that good journalism will prevail when you have the right people on it. We just now need Pablo Torre to get on to things that matter a little bit more than this particular collusion case. Not that the collusion case does not matter, but there's some other things in the world that I feel like if you sick Pablo Torre on, you might be able to get it done by dinner time tonight. The guy's a reporting guru at this point.
If I told him to search for a specific list that may or may not exist, I have the utmost confidence that he would find it.
He would be able to find something of it. I mean, my favorite, so I watch and listen to this podcast from time to time. Not a ton, but from time to time. I knew he was a little bit of a psycho, and I use psycho in a positive way here, like a sicko. I knew he was a little bit of a sicko when I saw the video of him in the Airbnb that allegedly Bill Belichick was walking out of shirtless with Jordan Hudson all those years ago. If you're going to those depths for a good piece of journalism, you are a king of the game.
It kind of hit me when I saw that video. I was like, oh, he really does.
He's like, he is
find
different.
Out everything.
He is him, as the kids say. He is in fact him. Before we get to Rob Brown of the Fan Upstate, one thing I do want to mention, we'll do a little bit of Denton's Daily News in about 40 minutes here. But one thing I do want to mention that's kind of a bummer. Caitlin Clark is not going to be participating in the WNBA All-Star events tonight or the game tomorrow. Dog, you want to talk about a gut punch? This is a gut punch. I wanted to see Caitlin Clark. I happen to like All-Star festivities still. I know I'm in the minority of that, whether it be the NHL, Major League Baseball, the NBA. The dunk contest sucks in the NBA, but the festivities itself I still find to be at least moderately entertaining. This was supposed to be a massive weekend for the WNBA, and with Caitlin Clark not participating in anything, I mean, it is just a gut punch. She'll be there. You'll still see her on camera, but she's not going to be in the three-point contest, which she was scheduled to be in. She was the team captain for the All-Star game, which she will now not play in. You got to feel bad for the other players, because with the attention that Caitlin Clark brings, the attention then would be on them as well. And now they have seemed to do a little bit of a 180 in terms of at least respecting Caitlin Clark when last year she was a rookie. Rookie coming into a league that's existed for a long time that people are just finding out about. There's going to be some friction. She earned respect because she handled it well. So it feels like people are much more friendly in the direction of Caitlin Clark than they were her rookie season. Everybody wants the attention because a rising tide lifts all ships. And now she is not going to be participating. By the way, it's in Indiana as well. All the events are in Indiana, which is where Caitlin Clark played. I'm sure the arenas will still be sold out. But for an organization that I will say actually timed its All-Star break at a pretty decent time in the sports calendar, my biggest gripe with the WNBA is and always has been that they start their playoffs around the start of the NFL season. And then they play games on Sundays. And it's just like, what do you...
Bad for business.
It's terrible for business. You have to have some self-awareness. You're setting yourself up for failure with that. The timing of their All-Star events in the summer actually lines up relatively well. Maybe you love baseball, but outside of baseball, there's really not a whole lot going on in the sports world. So no Caitlin Clark, there's a little bit of a gut punch. Let's talk some college football. Rob Brown, the Fan Upstate in South Carolina and the BetMGM Network, he is going to join us next. He was at SEC Media Day, and there's been a lot of chatter as to how the college football playoff model is going to change. We'll get his take on it when we get back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.
All right. Well, as we just mentioned, Lloyd Howell is out as the executive director of the NFL Players Association. This comes amid scrutiny regarding a collusion case, as well as Howell's part-time consulting position at the Carlyle Group, a private equity firm approved to seek minority ownership of NFL teams. And TJ Watt has reached a deal with the Steelers to make him the highest paid non-quarterback in football. He reached a 3-year extension worth up to $123 million with $108 fully guaranteed at signing. Meanwhile, Mike Williams is retiring. He's closing the book on an 8-year NFL career. Williams was looking to make his return to the Chargers roster after a disappointing final couple of seasons. He was working through an injury at Chargers camp and was placed on the physically unable to perform list before training camp. Dame Lillard is returning to the Portland Trailblazers after being waived by the Milwaukee Bucks. Dame signs a 3-year, $42 million contract and is set to make over $141 million over the next two seasons. After almost 2 weeks, baseball is back in the nation's capital. The Nats return to the return from the All-Star break tonight to take on the San Diego Padres. Michael Soroka likely to get the start against Dylan Cease. First pitch is at 6:45. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:15. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the streams and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on a Friday on the Team 980. Ben Standing in 20 minutes. His thoughts on the Terry McLaurin contract coming up then. It was a big week in college football. SEC Media Day, a 4-day event because the SEC does nothing small. Lots of conversation about the college football playoff and what it's going to look like for years to come. Guy that was there is the mighty Rob Brown. He's the host of the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate in the great state of South Carolina. You can also see him on the weekends on the BetMGM Network with Cody Decker from 12 to 4. And he joins me now here on the Team 980. Rob, my friend, always great to catch up. How was SEC Media Days when you were out there?
I mean, not as good as sharing the airways with Denton Day, but it was like a solid second place to that, buddy. It was good. It was interesting. Like, this was, and I kind of had this thought on Monday because the predominant conversation was football. It was quarterbacks. It was, returning experience. It was young guys. It was coaches. It was strategies. It was results and records and championships. And it kind of felt like for the first year since dating back to 2020, we had the pandemic, we had NIL, we had conference expansion, we had the transfer portal, we had conference realignment. We had this, that, and the other. This felt like the first media day where we were talking about football. And just as a football guy, I find all the business side of it. I'm one of those, 17 people in America that's super weird and fascinated by the business angle of the sport. But as a football guy, it was the first media days that we've done since 2020 that it really felt like it was predominantly about football, football players, football coaches, and football teams. And that was very nice and refreshing. Also, I've been called many adjectives, but that's the first time I've been called mighty. Thank you for inflating the ego, buddy.
That's what I'm here to do. Who felt like the big dog when you were walking around Atlanta?
Big dog is a fun euphemism to use because it was Georgia and Texas were the two teams that, pretty much consensus
everybody had them 1 and 2, either Texas first or Georgia first, but those two 1 and 2, and those were the answers. But I will tell you what I think was the another interesting angle of this. This is maybe the most interesting class of quarterbacks as a conference top to bottom that this conference has ever had, because there are a lot of them that could be bona fide superstars, and a lot of them that it feels like these programs are kind of hinging their entire season on. And yet we have questions about all of them. And I am starting all the way with Arch Manning at Texas. You know, Steve Spurrier 2 weeks ago asked the question, if this cat is transform a program good, how did he not beat out Quinn Ewers as the number one quarterback last year? And I thought it was a fair question. Gunnar Stockton at Georgia, one of the most highly touted quarterback recruits in a very long time. But we haven't really heard anything about the kid since he got to college other than transfer portal kind of stuff. Is Gunnar Stockton good enough to step into the shoes of Carson Beck and lead Georgia, Florida, DJ Lagway? We know he's incredibly impressive athletically. Does he have it in him to guide the offense for a full season and be electric for a full season? Question mark. South Carolina, Lenora Sellers, probably one of the few proven commodities in the SEC at quarterback. But the question was, how much higher can he elevate? Can he take this team, which on paper looks like more like a 7-5 team than a 10-2 or 9-3 team? But is Lenora Sellers able to Cam Newton, Tim Tebow his way to bullying that team to be 10-2, 11-1 backdooring in? You've got all John Mateer at Oklahoma. Same questions, right? Like, this is a super interesting class of quarterbacks in that there could be 7, 8, 9 of them that are bona fide stars, and yet every one of them could also be not that and ruin the hopes and dreams of many a college football fan across the conference. So because of that, Georgia and Texas were the top dogs in terms of teams that had their coaches and players being followed around. But every time that a John Mateer or an Arch Manning or a Lenore Sellers or a Gunnar Stockton walked past me, they were just being followed by a gaggle of people trying to talk and ask questions and all that. And I think that is because the narrative in this conference this year is, which quarterbacks are going to live up to the hype? And are there any that could guide a maybe second tier program ahead of a Texas or a Georgia because they did indeed find a star?
Talking with Rob Brown, he was at SEC Media Days. He hosts a Rob Brown show on the Fan Upstate in South Carolina. Was the Arch Manning experience as big of a deal as it seemed to be on social media?
Here's what I will say about Arch Manning, and I want to give him credit first, because there was a spot during Media Days that there was a group of us doing kind of an open Q&A with him, and somebody asked him about the hype, right? Like, Arch Manning, let's be real, is being talked about differently than every other quarterback in America right now. He's the shortest odds to win the Heisman Trophy. The most people down here are basically saying, if Arch is a star, Texas wins the national championship, yada, yada, yada. And so one of the folks that was there asked Arch Manning, talk to me about the hype. What is your opinion on the hype? People are saying you're a Heisman favorite, that you can lead Texas to a title. Do you feel the pressure? And Arch Manning, to his credit, who, by the way, is absolutely a Manning, right? Like, my dude, all these other guys are showing up in tailored custom suits. My dude showed up in a pair of, like, Old Navy khakis, a blue blazer, and a white shirt, like the standard freshman frat boy uniform of choice. Just like everybody else was the chains and the rings and the bling. Arch just looked like, if you didn't know who Arch Manning was and you walked past him, you'd think he was a high school intern that was working the event, right? But reporter asked him about the pressure and the hype, and his answer, point blank, without a moment of hesitation, was, yeah, I mean, I get it and I appreciate it, but I played 2 games, guys. Like, I don't know why I'm having all of this piled on me. Sure, I'm going to do my best to live up to it. I know that a lot of people are counting on me. I'm going to do all I can to live up to it. I have played 2 games. This is my first year as QB1. Like, he was kind of trying almost to maybe lighten up the conversation that Arch is Texas and Texas is Arch. But he was very gracious and humble in the way that he attacked it. And I'm one of the guys that has a lot of questions about Arch Manning and if in his first year as QB1, can he live up to that? But as far as being the guy, like, he was the player of every player at this event that was hounded the most, that had the biggest flock of people following him around, handled it like a pro. Now, he also has the benefit, obviously, of being able to talk to a grandfather, a father, and an uncle who obviously all at different points in their career were also highlight players and kind of get their advice. But handled everything like a pro, never really seemed to buckle under the pressure, was well-spoken, seemed like a guy who had his bleep together. And now it's just, I think he basically quashed that conversation that, okay, like, we know what the questions are. He knows the pressure that's on him. Let's get to August 31st and let's play some damn football.
Rob Brown with me here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. You mentioned Lenore Sellers. I loved Lenore Sellers last season. I think a lot of people started to fall in love with South Carolina towards the end of the season. Was there a little bit of a renewed confidence with South Carolina that you guys haven't seen lately?
Yes, there is. Now, with that being said, Shane Beamer also specifically pointed out that that team still views themselves as underdogs in the conference. He thinks they are still viewed as underdogs in the conference. And I don't think that that is particularly unfair. They had a great year last year. They were one win away from being in the playoffs. If you go back and you change the result of the loss to Alabama, where they shot themselves in the foot late, if you go back and change the loss to LSU, where, I don't care, judge away, the referees openly ripped that game away from them down the stretch. Either one of those two becomes a win. The South Carolina Gamecocks are in the playoffs. So I do think there is a sense of confidence, but Shane has also pointed out, we've had good years before. He was at South Carolina 15, whatever it was, years ago when they played for their only SEC title in a year where they beat Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia all in the same year. This team has had success on and off. They've just never been able to sustain it. And it does feel like if there is a year to show that they can string good years together, it's this year. What I will say, and I think this is unspoken but known, I think they know what Lenore Sellers is. They know he's special. They know he can probably be the best quarterback that this franchise, that this program has ever had. And I include some big names in that over the years, but the best quarterback they've ever had. And I do think the pressure is on Shane Beamer in South Carolina with the knowledge, belief, whatever you want to call it, that if they do not accomplish something with Lenore Sellers, backdoor themselves into a surprise SEC title game, or make the playoffs, or just accomplish something that you can go bang another successful season with Lenore Sellers, then if you're a future 4 or 5 star quarterback that South Carolina makes an offer to, and you look and you go, wait a minute, they had Lenore Sellers, they had a stud, and they could not win with that guy. You put yourself in a spot where future star quarterbacks may not be interested in coming to South Carolina, no matter how much of a stellar dude and players coach Shane Beamer is. So there is a lot of confidence in South Carolina. Offensive line's a question. Run game is a big question. Still waiting to find out if the NCAA is going to give a waiver to Rasul Faison, the guy that transferred from Utah State, or if they're going to be going with, you know, a guy who is probably a third stringer on a lot of other teams. But they know they've got wide receivers this year. They know they've got, even though they lost some talent and guys like Nick Amon-Worry to the league, they know they've got a lot of veteran experience, a lot of 3- and 4-year starters coming back on defense. But I think the pressure is on if you get a great year out of Lenore, but you don't accomplish anything at South Carolina, then a lot of future stars are going to go, I'm not going to win anything there. Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be about me. It's a great culture. Shane Beamer's a really nice guy. But if I want to win something, that's not the school to go to. So there is confidence Denton Day, but I would also point out, I think there may be a little bit of apprehension, anxiety, whatever word you want to use here, of if we don't get it done this year, it's going to be real hard to continue to convince big names to want to come here.
What is the best playoff model?
I am all in on the 5+11 model. That is my belief. And it's for two reasons. One of which is as a college football fan, one of which is as somebody who covers the SEC. From a college football fan perspective, you leave the door open for everybody. You leave a wider gap in the door for everybody. If you go with the one model I do not like is the 4-4-2-2-1+ model, right? Because if you give 8 of what will be 16 playoff spots, I don't care what anybody says, we're going to 16. There's too much money on the table to turn down. Money drives everything. Yes, even our beloved college football. When we go to 16, If you give half the field to two conferences without the requirement that they prove that they deserve half the field that year, you're also shutting half the field out for the overwhelming majority of college football teams, right? So if you go with that model, I think you kind of limit the ability for other schools to be able to grow under the oppressive thumb of the Big Ten and the SEC. If you go 5+11, from the overall college football perspective, teams that are in the newly formed PAC, whatever they are today, teams that are in the ACC, teams that are in the Big 12, teams that are in the Mountain Valley, the whatever conference, the door's open, and they may have to do a lot more to prove that they deserve to be in over an SEC or Big Ten team that maybe has a loss or two more than they do, but they can do that. They can be impressive, and Ashton Janti of Boise State can get them in. And the question becomes, what if there's two Ashton Jantis at two Boise States, and you only have a model that allows one group of five team, but we go, maybe this is the special team, right? Like, maybe this is the one that deserves that shot and will get it done. You would lock one out. So if you go 5+11, what you're going to get, I think, is more years than you don't. You are going to get four SEC teams in. You are going to get four Big Ten teams in. But for the SEC, which kind of flips to the other side of this coin for me, I think if you look at last year, if we had a 16-team playoff last year, I think the SEC gets six teams in. And so if you're the SEC and your job, your desire is to create a playoff system where you get as many teams in as you can, 5+11 guarantees you're getting four. And find me a year where there not be four SEC teams in the top 16, right? You're often getting five. And I think there is the chance, like last year, and I think like this year, where you could get six. So it makes sense to me that the SEC and the Big Ten are fighting, because the SEC is not, or the Big Ten is not 16 deep. It's not getting more than four. The SEC would. And I think that's where that fight comes from. I think the 5+11 is good for everybody who is not the SEC and the Big Ten. I also think the 5+11 is good for the SEC as well.
Yeah, maybe in like 5-10 years when Michigan is back, they might get five in the Big Ten, but it feels like there's a lot of work to be done. Rob, always appreciate it, my friend. It's great to catch up. I'm glad you had fun out there in Atlanta. We'll do this again soon.
Dude, I will be at ACC Media Days next week. I cannot wait to come back and talk about the one team from that conference that matters.
That one team is who I've already picked to win the national championship. So we will definitely talk about that one particular team in orange. Thank you, my friend.
You got it, brother. Love you a long time. See you soon, pal.
That is Rob Brown. He is the host of the Rob Brown Show in the Fan, on the Fan upstate in South Carolina. He's also on the BetMGM network on Saturdays from noon to 4 p.m. with Cody Decker. Coming up, we transition back into the NFL. The poll question is up on our Twitter page. If you have not gone and voted for it, please go do so at the Team 980. You can find me on Twitter at the Denton Day. Do you believe that Terry McLaurin will get an extension done by the beginning of training camp? It's a yes or a no poll question. Go vote on that. We will ask Ben Standing that question when we get back. He joins us on the other side. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.